Thank you all for for being here in the deepest sense of the word being. For as long as I can remember, when I give talks on Easter Sunday, this subject is pretty predictable. Even though it's a day we celebrate the idea of resurrection, which I know personally mostly through the experience of coming through bad times, rising out of the ashes of difficult experiences, seeing spring emerge out of winter. The great mythic power of the idea that one lives beyond life, all very powerful. But what I'm drawn to, and what I want to talk about today, is the experience of being on the cross. And I want to talk about it because it's so incredibly humanizing and important. Trying to take an enlightened being and Son of God, true master, a great teacher, and put them in a moment of such trial and suffering is beyond, in a way, the understanding that one would like to have of a beneficent ruler, God, presence. And it challenges us in profound ways. But I think what I would like to kind of get at is, what goes into your mind when you know you have, in a sense, been a great servant of the great Father, of your Father, of holiness itself, of love itself? What happens when you are challenged by the extremity of pain and suffering that Jesus went through? What goes on in your mind? And we have the reports of what went on in his mind and the broader detail. But I think it's really important because we're all human, and to some degree, we're all sons and daughters of that which is most holy. And because we all move toward our own cross, if you will. What happens in your mind, in a human mind, when pain is all-powerful and suffering is all-powerful and unavoidable? And I'm not trying to just put you through this week after week. That's not my goal. I just really need you to understand how profoundly humanizing it is to discover how cut off you are, how abandoned you are, how alone you are in that state. And what must go through your mind when that happens? You've lived a good life, a spiritual life, a meditative life. You've become enlightened or not. You've become all-seeing. You've become a great servant. You've become a good, kind, loving person. Why is there so much suffering? And who is it that's suffering? And what is the journey that goes on in that brain that has done everything right, and then there you are, hanging on a cross? And if you can try to trace the journey, it is probably a mind in great conflict, in great agony, trying to figure it out. Was I wrong all the time? Was it all a dream? Was it all an illusion? What is it in me that is leading towards such suffering? What did I do wrong? Where did I come from? What did I do that shouldn't have been done? What is the great lie of being, you know, first being brought into the presence of light and kindness and goodness and joy and bliss? Where is all that when you are in massive, massive suffering? And the journey of the mind at that point is very scrambled. And I don't care how awake you are, when that journey starts to happen, everything is up for grabs. Everything. All of the truth that you believed in, all of your beliefs at all, are no longer relevant because you are in a place that is abandoned by something higher and greater. And Jesus called out and said, "Why have you abandoned me?" Which immediately keys into a key idea. There is Jesus and that to which he was speaking. What is that separation? The thing that abandons you. Who are you in that configuration? Well, for a long time, I suspect Jesus felt one with that presence, one with God's presence, one with the Father. He felt anointed. He felt that he was the voice of, he was the channel of, he was the very being and essence of the Father. And he felt, if you will, liberated and saved, and then pain beyond belief. I don't care how enlightened anybody is. I don't know. I mean, there are possibly beings out there who are so enlightened that pain does not touch them, that none of the fear of that touches them. And God bless. I think that would be an extraordinary achievement. And there may well be beings who have done that. But the great story that we focus on today is that of Christ. And Christ is suffering and abandoned. And he doesn't know what to do with his mind. His mind is giving him no answers, no help, no satisfaction. And what does he do? What is the salvation? In a way, I think he probably, and I'm only guessing, gives up trying to understand. There is just suffering. And in some strange way, going, "Ah, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing to be done," is the beginning of a process of acceptance of the unacceptable. Something happens, and it only can happen in the midst of great suffering where you go, "There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do." And the I that is suffering begins to fall away. This thing I've been talking about a lot recently, which is this non-reactivity. This thing that's reacting to suffering, this biological entity, this physiological being, which relates to pain, realizes it's not going to get anywhere. That the mind is noisy and is awful and is unhappy and unpleasant as it may be, can't solve the problem. And it begins to, if you don't strangle on it, it just begins to go, "I can't do this. It doesn't work. There's no solution. There's no answer. There's nothing that will satisfy here." And so that is really an important moment. And at that moment, something remarkable happens, which is you realize you are not the first person to suffer. You are not the only person to suffer. That the world is filled with suffering beyond anything you had ever imagined. Because most of our minds are story minds, and they have stories of other people's journeys. We read for that, we watch movies, we watch television. We try to learn beyond ourselves by watching stories, by reading stories, by hearing stories of other people. And in a certain way, we compartmentalize those stories into little parts of our brain, and we go, "Oh, that person suffered so terribly, or this happened, or that happened," but it's very contained. It's very much a piece of knowledge. It's a piece of awareness. It's something structured in the mind. But we don't experience it because we can't afford to experience it. And so what happens is we are aware of suffering until the moment that real suffering hits us. And when that happens and you realize, "Oh my God, others out there possibly hundreds, thousands, millions, hundreds of millions, maybe billions of people are suffering. And if they aren't right now, they are going to. And when that happens, you hit this extraordinary space of empathy and compassion for the totality of the human experience. And when that happens, and it happened to Christ on the cross, he looked out away from himself and away from his suffering, and he saw that it was universal and global. And he said these exquisite words, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And that was the key moment of liberation, because he turned away from personal agony and cared about, empathized with, had compassion for the other. And when he did that, something happened according to biblical teaching. The doors of heaven opened, and into your hands I commend my spirit. That is the human journey. We are all on that journey. I know for the last, God knows how many months, I've focused on my own pain journey. And I don't do it to get empathy, and I don't do it to get, you know, what doctor I should go to or what healer I should go to. I'm just telling it to you because I am learning faster and more than I have ever learned before. And I am understanding many of the elements of the journey we're on. And I'm also understanding the limitations of my knowledge and how firmly those limitations show themselves at the doors of pain. The real work of human life is to not react to everything that shows up in your vicinity. Reacting to emotional pain, to old patterns of pain, to programmatic pain that was given to you by your parents and your grandparents and your school chums and teachers, all of those little things that you edge at and fight, that's very small pain. And yet, even that we have to let go of, and we have to let go of. And by letting go, take a breath, ask for help to surrender, hold it for a moment, and feel the tense, anxiety-driven, stress-filled heart chakra that you have, and feel it go, oh, and for a moment, open it up. Open your heart, open your belly, open your mind, open your egocentric nature, feel the power in your sex chakra of resurrection and renewal and rebirth, because it's there for everybody. And you let go of all of this stuff, and this new light comes through, only temporarily. Do not achieve permanent awareness enlightenment, to my knowledge, in body form. I could be wrong, and if there are teachers out there who have pulled it off, God bless, go study with them. But I think to hold that out, to dangle that out to people as a part of a practice, like I have it and you don't, is really deeply, deeply unfair and a terrible sales pitch. I have it and you don't, and you can have it if you do what I tell you to do in my way. And then if you don't achieve it, you just walk around as a spiritual failure, and nobody is a spiritual failure, nobody. The journey really is, how do we deal with this complexity of mind? How do we deal with it? The mind is very self-absorbed. It deals with us all the time. It's programmed to deal with us all the time. It is trying to keep us comfortable and safe, but it gets very miswired. It starts to do things in reaction to life itself that turn us into a responsive organism that is not always responding in a healthy way to the given reality around us. So what do we do with this noisy mind? And two things. If you can go into your third eye and just breathe and relax and open, again, ask for help to surrender if need be, and just relax this reactive mechanism. Just let it go. And then start to have a separation from your own thought process and begin to observe it as something that's happening. And I've talked about this a lot, like weather, like clouds coming in and disappearing from the sky, sun coming out, going away, snow falling, rain happening. Just watch it in your own mind. Your brain will become something you observe, and then something that you, in a way, understand that you are, but it's just in motion. And the fact that you single out parts, that you separate it, that you deal with it in some way, is you turn the mind into an object, and you start to have battle zones with your mind. You start to go, I like this part of my mind, I don't like that part of my mind. You no longer feel like it's anything to do with you. It's just something that is out there running the show of you, telling you I'm hungry, I want to have sex, I want to go do this, I want to do that. It tells you what to do. And after a while, you are a creature of your mind. You are led by, directed by your mind. And it is this egocentric, throat-oriented, me, 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 me thing that leads your life. And if you start to take away its power, it doesn't like that because you have empowered it so much that if you start to go, I'm not paying attention, it will start to come at you in all these different ways. And I'm really intrigued by that because I have worked for 50 and plus years to surrender the mind and have arrived at states that are larger than anything I had actually imagined or anticipated. And I have often thought of them as awakened states, as that I am enlightened, I am aware, I am liberated. And then it constantly comes back and says, bullshit. You know, you're something, but you're not, whatever you are more awake than you were, you're more enlightened than you were, but you are still basically this biological form with this mind. And the mind now for me is less and less a struggling zone. One of the reasons it's less of a struggling zone is that I have learned to listen to that stillness which precedes mind. There is something that you discover when you meditate, when you get quiet, when you go deep. It's this, what I call the ocean of being. You start to discover this wiser, wider, more brilliant intelligence than your own mind, and your own mind sees that. And as you start to give energy to that larger knowing, it starts to recognize your awareness, and it starts to become directive of that awareness, and it gives you the gift of insight, wisdom, and guidance to move through your life. And it is quite remarkable. And when you start to listen to it and then act on it, which means pay attention and do what you are told in a way, you will find that you are acting in ways that make you very, very kind, very much a good person, very helpful to others, very much aware of others, very compassionate, very empathetic, in ways that are quite surprising and unexpected. You have a sense of the universal in the particular, and it really is a voice that speaks to you and moves through you, and ultimately you just become this channel for it. The walls that define that space, as big as it may get, are always going to be present in the experience of your biology, in the experience of your physical nature, so that no matter how open you get and how much you get flooded with the sense of goodness and kindness and love and compassion, the body is there and it is going to be there temporarily. And at some moment, it's going to go away. And it's going to go away probably with some kind of fear, stress, tension, and pain. And that is something, in a sense, that we train for, because it's inevitable, it's going to happen. And the training is really allowing it to happen without reacting. Surrender, surrender, surrender. This is the journey that we are on spiritually, meditatively, learning to let go and let go. What I am discovering in my own journey is walls that I didn't exactly know were there. And I have talked about them a little bit in recent time. I talk about them now only because I think it's important to share some of the difficulties of the journey in case you ever arrive at these very specific places. But these far out walls of mind and heart and soul, if you will, of instinctual self, they hit barriers that are so existentially threatening and frightening that they test every ounce of your capacity to open to the unknown. Stuff comes in. One of the things I've discovered is, I will call it a little bit like what Christ felt on the cross. I am aware of human suffering now in ways I've never been aware of it. It is not compartmentalized in like, oh my God, there's this suffering and there was the Holocaust and there was this and there was that, and it all finds a certain place in the brain. Now it is experiential. And it is a very hard experience to be aware of, not intellectually, but in a way, in a full body way, of how much people go through in this world. And this last year has been a very heightened awareness of that for each of us individually, but also for those of us who have any kind of global sensitivity, universal sensitivity, it's overwhelming. The pain, the suffering, the drama. And then let me throw in the beauty, the joy, the amazement of the totality. And it's all combined. It's all one whole. But there are times where the universe pulls away what we will call the heavenly realm and leaves you in a kind of painful darkness. And I have visited that space. It comes like that. I'm having a wonderful day. Everything is beautiful. Gone. Suddenly the bottom drops out. And there I am in absolute dark nothingness, emptiness, meaninglessness, soulfulness. Everything goes away. And it is the most existentially distressing space imaginable. I tell you that again, because if you go there, and there are lots of things in life that bring us to that point, loss, potential loss, fear of loss, pain, fear of pain, the awareness of others' pain. If that doorway opens into the abyss, that is where your entire spiritual practice comes in. That's where you have to go. I will tell you, and I've heard this story from others now, of very spiritual people experiencing really powerful suicidal thoughts, which is really interesting to me, because that is kind of what arises. You really feel betrayed on some fundamental level, meaningless on every level, and then you don't know what to do with that. Well, I will tell you right now, there's nothing to do. Doing is not the answer. It is witnessing the reactor, the part of you that's still there, the walls at the outer perimeter of your being that are still fearful of that pain, fearful of that reality, and trying to go, okay. There's also this thing of patience, of learning to sit still in the midst of darkness, in the midst of despair, in the midst of fear, hanging on the cross, trying to just surrender, surrender. And if you can arrive at surrender, this thing that comes up that knows that you are not the first person to witness the darkness, you are not the first person to witness the abyss, You are not the first person to enter nothingness and meaninglessness. You are part of the human condition, the chain of humanity that knows this. And if you can just look at that and open to that, you will feel an embrace of totality, an embrace of the world around you, an embrace of every human being you've ever met. And you will feel a solidarity with the human experience, the human journey, what it means to be alive. One of the things that has happened for me recently, and I will just throw this out there, is in the depth of that experience, I find myself reaching out. And I find it's like my mother's hand, but it could be my dad's hand, it could be anybody's hand, but a hand comes and takes me like that. It just takes me. There's no words, there's no sound, there's no information, there's no additional help, but I feel touched and held. That touch comes from the greatness of being. That's all I can tell you. And I tell you that in a sense as a resurrection story, because out of the absolute despair of loss, this happens. I don't know what this is, but I know when it happens, I feel blessed or anointed or saved. I feel resurrected and I feel comforted. And I try to share that comfort with you because we are all, every one of us, on this journey. And either you are on this journey awake or you're going to back into it, which is, I think, how most people go, you know, closed down, you know, totally drugged out of your mind, whatever it is. And then all of the, everything goes away in a sense, the biological you goes away. And it's my prediction, I don't know if this is true, that everything I'm talking about in that existential vastness is all that's left. I personally would not want to learn about that without having had 50 years of practice and exposure to that journey, because it is a huge lifetime effort to make yourself available to the beauty and the terror, and they are both there, of this universe we live in. And in the end, to realize that we are these tiny little specks that disappear. And that if you let go of your mind and you stop reacting to everything that comes up in front of you, and you start to relax and open, when that little speck has to go finally, yes, it will experience biological pain and suffering, but you will figure out the way Christ figured out and taught us to figure out, feel the compassion, feel the suffering of all humanity, and reach out to others. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. That is the lesson of Easter morning. That is the lesson of this meditation that we do. It has great purpose. It has great value. It is worth a lifetime of effort. However far you get along in the practice is kind of dependent on your will, your drive, your hunger, your need, whatever that may be. You can sit in one place the whole time and not move one inch and still feel kind of self-satisfied about it. But I will tell you, the real journey involves movement. It involves transformation. It involves growth. It involves spiraling upward, uplift into greater and greater and broader awarenesses of life itself. And you become probably more than anything else, a person of enormous gratitude for every breath you take. And I mean it down to that, every breath you take. That's what we get to. And if there's more than all of this, and there may well be, if there are certain journeys into enlightenment and awakening and all of that, that free you completely from the particulars of this journey that I'm talking about, if I find them, I will tell you. But what I think I have found so far is we are very human, and our humanity is blessed with something vast, oceanic, and probably infinite and eternal. I can't give you that for an absolute, but that which is speaking through me believes that to be true. So here we are, and I can tell you that the words that are being spoken are guideposts, and if they work for you, use them. If they don't, don't. If you're a good Christian in your practice, maybe this will help give you a little bit of insight into looking at your own religious heritage. If you come at this from Buddhist or Jewish or Islamic tradition, there's truth to that as well. It's your job. This is your journey. It's up to you to figure it out. You will not escape what I'm talking about. You will not at any point find a way out. There's only a way through, and that involves open, deep expansion, embrace, a profound yes to totality, a gratitude for the fact that you're on this journey, and an ability, when your mind starts coming at you and attacking you, as it may start to do, that you can look at your mind and say, I know what you're doing, and I know you need to do this, but I do not need to pay attention. I will alert you that the mind, you probably already know this, can be overwhelming in its power, and it can talk to you in ways you do not want to be spoken to, and it can make you believe things you do not want to believe or do not believe. Your mind is very powerful, and when you reach the edges of the mind, that power is even greater than anything you've dealt with before. When that happens, just find your simplicity, go into the quietest, deepest place you can go to, and let it pass over. Let it pass over. It will go away. It does not last. And if it lasts for a period of time, your capacity to let go and let go and let go will be enhanced. You will become more powerful in a way in your ability to deal with the existential realities, and you will be able to do the one thing that's really seems to be our directive: help others in this journey. Help others. Help them by being kind, by being good, by being loving, by being present, by listening, by reaching out and making yourself a servant of the drama and the journey and the suffering and the difficulty of others' lives. That's what we can do. We really can do that. And that's kind of what we're asked to do in this process: help others. And every one of you, every one of you is good at that. And I know every one of you, you can do that. You don't have to stand on the street corner. You just have to go to your people who are closest to you and just be good. Just be nice. It's, you know, the ultimate simplest teaching I have to offer, and trust me, it ain't my teaching. It's kind of the Ten Commandments, it's the Dalai Lama. You know, it's just there. Just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So on this Easter morning, you know, thank you for being here. Thank you for continuing to pay attention to these words. They're really here to help you, and they're really here to help others. And if you do this right, you will become the gift to others that you have been to me. And I will tell you, if there's any way I can help you and support you through this, I am available. That's all I really am about at this point. So if I can be of service, get a hold of me. In the meantime, allow yourselves to be reborn. Allow yourselves to be resurrected. Allow yourselves to become the full version of the person you have dreamt of being. Any questions?
Bruce, I have a question. You were talking about not really being able to find that full enlightenment while embodied, basically, because there's always going to be that limitation. I'm curious about like the resurrection body being an Easter talk, because then it just seems like that's then the next, you know, Russian doll in the set. And
yeah, I'm not actually. I don't have an answer to that. Resurrection is the great faith of an entire religious universe, and it takes faith because we don't know. I do know that the great teacher of that faith suffered, learned a great lesson, went on into his father's sort of containment, and then reappeared according to legend and according to myth and according to the truth of a spiritual religion. I don't know what to say to that, and I really wish I could say something definitive about it. My guess is it begins to shed light on the nature of the human experience, which is probably much more dreamlike and hallucinatory than we understand, much less physical and tangible than we understand. But, you know, I have allowed myself, or it's not really a choice. I have arrived at a place where I don't know anything. And I really can't answer your question. And I think everybody has to answer it for themselves, figure out what it means, figure out why you want to know the answer to that. What does resurrection mean? Why do you want to be born again or live forever? You know, who's asking that? Who wants that and why? I think those are important questions. The answer to that, I don't know who can really give it to you other than as a doctrine of faith that that's possible or that it's true. And if it is true and it serves you in some way, take it in. I believe we are eternal. And I think this goes on forever in ways that are beyond anything I comprehend. It's too big. I am too small. I'm too insignificant in the scheme of things to give an answer to that question. But I think it's a valid question. And I think it can lead you in a lot of incredible directions. So keep asking it, but just don't expect someone like me to give an answer.
Thanks.
Anybody else?
Bruce.
Daniel.
Could I just share in response to that I deeply admire your exploration and you're sharing your exploration with us and your personal experiences. I also feel that we're using the internet right now and Zoom for these classes. We didn't produce our computers ourselves and we didn't invent the internet ourselves and Zoom ourselves. We rely on the collective efforts and experiences of others to bring us this technology, and we have faith in it. We're using it, right? So, and from that point of view, I thought I'd just share that there's an interesting book. I didn't read it yet, but I attended a talk with a Christian, a Catholic priest named Francis Tiso, and his Catholic priest teacher kind of sent him on a mission to Tibet to explore modern accounts of what's called the rainbow body, firsthand reports as a method of exploring one non-theological dogmatic exploration of what possibly happened with the resurrection and Jesus. And so it's kind of quite interesting, his experience meeting the community of people around this one particular famous account and firsthand experiencers of it, and even the Kempo's brother, and also his own historical explorations of all these cultures that collided on the Silk Road that influenced each other. And the book is called Rainbow Body and Resurrection, Spiritual Attainment, The Dissolution of the Material Body in the Case of Kempo Acho. And that's by this Catholic priest, Francis Tiso. I think I've heard him summarize a lot of the things. Again, I haven't read the book in its entirety, but I heard him summarize a lot of his experiences. And I found he was, my sense of the man was that he also is kind of a really profoundly experienced yogi himself, despite being a Catholic priest, you know what I mean? Since this is a yogic tradition, I just thought I would share that kind of realm of research that this priest made into the resurrection and the parallels with other yogic traditions.
You know, I cannot help but believe there are tens of thousands of explorations into that, and that one or more of them may speak to us in ways that make deep sense. Why not? I keep looking for the experiential for myself, and that's what I will continue to do without trying to pronounce my experience as being the experience or being ultimate truth. It's simply what I have found. And for me, that's the better road to walk, only because I don't want to be held to a kind of knowledge that comes out of belief or faith. I want to really be held to a kind of knowledge that comes out of whatever experience, how small or large it is, you know, that I can share. And that's what I will do. And if you do read that book and you come away from it with some insight that would be really meaningful and valuable, I'd love you to share it. Anybody else? I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, I like two of my Tibetan teachers. I was with at the time of their passing, and they both went into a state of tukdom or post-death meditation, one for 8 days where their body didn't decay. So that's like my personal experience. Like when I saw one teacher's face, like after he had passed in this state, he looked younger than when I had seen him alive pass, you know, he was glowing. So those are like my personal experiences, that there's something extraordinary within that technology. Having not died myself, I can't tell you my personal experience, obviously.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, I know that you've had those experiences with those teachers, and you know, it sounds. Yeah. Well, I know pictures of Nityananda. His death pictures are as alive as his life pictures, and you know, I think that certainly is possible. I mean, I hope when you come to my funeral, you don't go, he blew it. And I mean, and you know, yeah, that could happen. I don't know that I'll look younger, and I don't know that I'll look like for 8 days after that Jews don't let you stay around that long. But I do know that I don't know if I would make that the final judgment on the efficacy of all of this. On the other hand, what else do we have? So, you know, it's certainly a wonderful pathway if your desire is to die looking young.
Well, that's just a sign of what's happening in the subtle level. That's not the goal, is to look young.
It may be true. I really don't know. And neither do you, and neither will you until you pass. So we'll find out. and if we can share at that point, that'll be great. Right now, the sharing is done in this moment, in this way. So we all have a lot to learn. That's all I can tell you. Let it go for everybody. If you all, you're totally exhausted. Thank you for sitting through this. Be back in LA or in San Rafael in 2 weeks. And I wish you all, you know, a wonderful rest of today.
Thank you.